So the first one is kind of on an umbrella level. So over the whole subject, we could probably spend the rest of the time on this question, and it's a two-part question. I'll try to. So it's where do communication gaps in our school system start? Who is responsible, and what are some signs they may be happening? So that's part one. Where do they start? Who's responsible? What are some signs they may be happening? And then part two is, are there some basic systems we could proactively put in place so communication flows reliably through the entire organization? So where do they start? Who's responsible? What are some signs they may be happening? And what are some things we can put in place? Like I said, we could spend the whole topic on this, but it's just kind of as a high level. So Carson, you want to start us off on that?
Are these on? Yeah, thank you. For the first part, where do communication gaps in our school systems start? I guess I have found that they can start pretty well anywhere. I can't be very specific with that. I'll share something that I read recently. Communication is a transfer of information from one person to another, whether or not it elicits confidence, but the information transferred must be understandable to the receiver. And I guess overall, where communication gaps start is right there, giving where we don't give info in a way that is being understood by those who are to be understanding it. I have experienced and caused communication gaps on board level, from board to teachers, from board to patrons. They usually start when someone is not made certain that all parties have received the information needed. And I don't think that's usually tried. Most often it's believed that communication has happened, and thus nothing is done about it. Maybe you know what I'm talking about. Who is responsible? What are some signs they may be happening? I'm not going to touch very much on the what are some signs they may be happening. I feel like we're going to get into that as we go along here. Who is responsible? The person that has the information that everyone else deserves. They're responsible. So if you're a school board chairman and something was decided, there's information that people deserve to know. That's your job. Talk, share it. It could be any one of the parties, it could be the board, could be the teachers, if they're not communicating, parents. Part two, are there some basic systems that we could proactively put in place? Well, forgive me if you disagree with me, but I like policy and I like systems. Seems like things work better that way in my world. So often if you just rely on memory or well, hey, you looked after it last time. If you rely on those kind of things, things are going to get forgotten. Things are going to get miscommunicated. So some standard operating procedures are helpful, I think. Whose responsibility is it to inform the patrons of a decision made at the board meeting? Do you know? Who keeps the minutes? Who sends them out? Who should they even go to? Have you talked about it? Is that an understood thing? I have found in my experience that most communication gaps start or grow when things are assumed. And I think we're going to talk on that a little bit later.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here and once again to be part of this event, especially absorbing the topics and learning from them. So communication gaps. A gap. That was my first thought, is gaps typically start small. They typically start somewhere and they can be very small and obscure. And that's what makes them critical. Some, if fixed rapidly, hardly exist. But they start small and they typically don't fix themselves. It takes effort. It takes some intentionality for that to happen. An example, I work in tile drainage with farmers' fields, and I had to think of a spot in a farmer's field, and he lived at this spot for 20 plus years, I don't know, just by the amount of pipe and the age of the pipe that was in the ground, I assume this. But it was a very productive farm, but he had this one spot, and after excavating for a while, we found that there was one tile missing. Now, this is clay tile, so 12 inches of tile was missing. When it was installed, 12 inches out of thousands of feet in that field. And obviously, somebody had come in and put in some other drains to help fix this problem, and it went on and on, but it still was wet. It was still a problem. And so I thought of that. Isn't that like our communication? One thing. Everything else was done right, but it was one thing, and that created a problem. It created unproductivity. It created stress, and until the gap was addressed, it was unproductive and catastrophic, even in some cases. All right, so where does communication gaps start in our school? Some of the things, if you listen, if you hear, whether it's on the board, whether it's interaction with the teachers, parents, the phrase, "Well, I never heard that. That's news to me." That should catch our attention, especially when it has to do with something that needs to be communicated, that needs to be known to whatever phase of school. And then observations, disconnect in people. That should be another thing that we watch for, another thing that we're listening for. Where's another spot that the gap can start? I talked to a teacher about this, not at our school, a seasoned teacher, and his comment was this, very true, that gaps can start when we engage with something, a subject, a problem, an issue. We engage deeply with it. We're working out a solution in our heads. We've got this, and we're thinking of plan A, plan B, plan C, and then we come to our associates. So whether it's board, whether it's co-teachers, and we have the plan mapped out. We have the answer, and we present that, and we're met with blank stares. Right there's a gap. We have to understand that they need time. They need time to engage with the subject, and we need to give them that luxury. All right, and what are some basic systems? Who communicates what? And we're going to talk about that further on, I think. I don't want to get into that. We need to have that clear. Who's communicating what? And what is getting communicated to who? It's maybe a play on words, but that needs to be as clear as well. There's some responsibility there. And I like to think of it as this triangle where we have teachers, we have board, we have parents, and there's a communication between each of those and to all of them. There's vibrant communication. If one of those gets disconnected, it affects the other two corners of the triangle. It's no longer a triangle. It's no longer complete. And I think we've all been part of that. Another system that I think probably is very current to all of us is what happens when somebody joins our school, our board, our teacher group. Do we have a process, an onboarding process? I just was confronted with this one where there was the kindergarten parents, some new kindergarten parents. One of them texted me and says, "Hey, could we be put on the school hotline? We understood that school was canceled. Now it was a day or two before they were starting, and yeah, that should have been done." So thankfully they reached out, but right there was a gap, you know. So I would just like to end this part with saying that communication is so important that it's worth doing well. So
that's good. Vernon, do you have something to add to that yet?
Well, I was thinking about the fact that sometimes it's our selfishness or our short-sightedness that keeps communication from happening. When we lived in Ephrata, Pennsylvania, the telephone company had, I forget what they called it, a fiber token ring, where the fiber optic cable made an entire circuit of the county. And their idea was, if a backhoe hits the fiber cable accidentally on this side, nobody's service gets cut off because the signals are going in a continuous loop. And I really like what Brother Carson said about having a SOP, standard operating procedures, routines and habits that the children get used to and the parents get used to, whether you use digital means or whether you send notes home with the children, that it's important to the children and their parents that they've got the message, and that on the school vehicle the next morning, they say to the little tiny child, hey, did you get your mom that note? You know, that everybody's, this is what's happening, the field trip is happening, and you don't want to be there without a lunch or without lunch money or whatever it takes for the field trip. And so having methodologies to make sure and having communication be routine. Another thing I thought of was, so there's this thing of bringing parents on board, like the brethren said. When you do standardized achievement tests, when you do SATs or CATs or whatever you do up here, to make sure the parents know when they can see the results, how much of the results they can see, and to present those results in an honorable way so that the struggling child is still respected. Just a few thoughts there.
Thank you. Okay, so going to go into avoiding gaps in meetings for the next couple questions. I have kind of some three sections. So avoiding gaps in meetings. And first question, how can board members or teachers approach parents about a student's need without unnecessarily triggering defensiveness? Vernon, you want to tackle that one again?
Did you notice the word unnecessarily was in there without unnecessarily triggering defensiveness? Sometimes in our human nature, we get defensive. A perfect approach doesn't keep me from being defensive if either I'm being carnal or if the subject of discussion is one that really hits me deeply emotionally. So I would say the first thing, if you're not going to trigger the parent's response in defensiveness, is to be sure you're loving the child, and to be sure you're compassionate for the child and for the parent. We had a teacher in our area that was struggling with this student, and finally her principal said, here, read this book. And he gave her a copy of the book, Chell, C-H-E-L, by Johannes Berry, the same lady that wrote Heidi. She read the book, Chell. She was encouraged, and by the way, if your teacher hasn't read the book, Chell, she should, he should. Read the book, Chell.
How did you spell that again?
C-H-E-L.
C-H-E-L.
By Johannes Berry, same author that wrote Heidi, the book Heidi. So the teacher had a problem. This little boy was just trying her out and trying her out. Not that he was being so wicked, but she just was having struggles relating to him. She had him ball and chained to her ankle, if you've ever been there. She had this little boy ball and chained to her ankle, and so she was encouraged. Now, every day, say one positive thing to him. And one day, it was getting toward closing bell, and she just hadn't found one positive thing all day to say to the poor chap. And she's coming down the wire, and she's walking around, and they have their papers on her desk to go home. And finally, she walks by his desk, and she says, I like the way you wrote your name on that paper. That was the only positive thing she could find the whole day long. So we got to lay aside all personal frustration if we're not going to trigger parents. We're going to have to be moving by compassion. And it's a struggle to take your emotions out of a situation and not create stress by the fact that your emotions are on your shoulder or on your shirt sleeve or somewhere, or maybe ball and chain to your ankle. If you're having that child for breakfast, dinner, and supper, it's not a good time to talk to the parents. To lay aside all personal frustrations, and then maybe with the approach, when you approach a parent to take on the form of a servant and to say, how can I help your son with this or that area? and make sure it's an area that's visible, not some... Or do you have any pointers to know, for me, to know how to help your child manage this or that problem? Or maybe the need is physically plain and obvious. Maybe you can say something like, could you please help Susie to learn to keep her nose clean? Because that's usually something like an obvious problem. Or David's shoe soles are loose and he's tripping on the playground. Could you folks, you know, make sure David's shoes are taken care of? But then sometimes the need is subtle. And there you want to ask the parent for confirmation. You want to say something maybe like, do you find Sharon responding slowly to your instructions at home? Or maybe something like, are there times at home where Jared will just burst into tears without you understanding why? And just try to bring the parent on board with you.
That's good. Ask questions. That's good. Carson and Tom, anything to add to that?
I guess I just underscore what Vernon said about compassion. To relate to people with grace and with love goes such a long ways. We know what we probably know. If you're in administration or you're the teacher, you probably know what the trigger points are for this parent. You don't have to jump on that in the first sentence. Let's be a little more gracious than that.
Tom, you're good? Okay, then I have a question for Carson. It's still in meetings here. When you're conducting a meeting, what are some practical helps you use to make sure everyone receives clear information and understands the final decisions?
So you can try this a lot. It still doesn't mean it'll happen. But here's maybe some practical things that can help you. Recently I heard someone state, they came to me and stated, why does everyone come away from the meeting with a different conclusion? So I've been putting some thought into that recently.
Move your mic up.
I'm sorry. A huge part of open communication is listening well. Mm-hmm. And depending if you're in the hot seat or not, we get good at listening for what we want to hear. And we kind of just block out everything else. And often if you're chairing the meeting, that can be pretty stressful. If you know there's somebody there that's listening for something, maybe they're not getting it. So be honest. Maybe you're discussing an item, multiple different ideas and opinions on the table. What's the best way to start whittling that down to a conclusion? Be willing to ask honest questions. Be open for honest answers from the people you're having a meeting with. Okay, brother so-and-so mentioned this. Does anyone have an issue with that? Yes, you have an issue. Okay, what's your issue? We're mature men here. If it's a board meeting, I've found 10 times out of 10, I think, that mature men can humbly handle that type of dialogue. It has to happen. Work your way through the ideas until you have landed on a unified conclusion. And that may be a long ways from where you started. But take the time to work through that process until you come to a unified conclusion. You cannot expect at that point that everyone has understood. Usually that's where we stop. It's a unified conclusion. All right, next point. Don't expect that everyone got it. State it simply. Whittle it down to a simple statement. Is that clear to all? Maybe somebody still says, I don't get it. That can be stressful. If you're impatient like me sometimes and you want to get going, take the time. Once the meeting is done, if you have a secretary, somebody that was keeping minutes, type it out. Send it to everybody. It does a lot of good for them to read the conclusion. That will help them solidify that in their minds.
Excellent. So I heard listen well, be open to what you hear then, and then restate the final conclusion and ask if it's clear. That extra two steps that we don't take so often. Tom or Vernon, do you have comments you want to add?
I know Vernon has content here, and I'd really like to hear it.
Well, I think I underscore what he said. Just a couple more practical helps was when I needed to chair a school board meeting, I like to have a calendar of the next maybe at least 4 weeks or 6 weeks on the table in front of it, in front of every brother, so we don't come, oh, we forgot to plan for this or that, or we missed this or that. Just kind of give a little forethought. Interview your teachers before the meeting so that there's not issues going to be coming on where you needed to pray about it a little bit or think about it a little bit, or you know, try to find out what are we going to have in the meeting, and then make a portion of the minutes accessible to the teachers, because if they've had input into what are the needs here and then they don't hear anything till the next Friday, it's like, whoa, that's not right. So have a portion of the minutes that are available to the teachers and are available tomorrow morning, if you please. And at the end of every meeting, try to recap the commitments that were made and the responsibilities that were taken upon themselves and the decisions that were made. Try to recap them. And like the brother said, get verbal acknowledgement from the brother that committed to finding a new pencil sharpener or committed to fixing the room three, whatever. Get a verbal commitment again. Okay, so you're on for this. Okay, so you committed to that. You brethren or whatever. And at the end of the meeting, get that on paper and back to the brethren so that there's not a surprise. Oh, I forgot I was supposed to fix the room three thing.
Excellent. Very intentional on the recap and making sure everything's clear. Okay, let's go on to conflict. So now we have a conflict happening. How do we avoid gaps in that? So Tom, how can communication be encouraged in times of tension and disagreements?
So I don't know why they picked me for this one, but we'll take an attempt at it.
Well, one of you three had to.
So, tension, disagreements. Should we ask for a raise of hands? How many can understand that? We won't. Thanks, Carson. The fact is, not all conflict is wrong, and I think we understand that. I hope we understand that. Conflict is good, brings some value, but we aren't talking about that. We're talking about how to encourage communication. We're built for some tension, and some tension is good. I was thinking of some of the roofs that have gone down here in the last little bit with the snow load in this area, and it's not because of that they couldn't take any tension. The trusses were designed for some tension. And that's the same way it is with our relationships. But what we're talking about is when that tension overruns the designed structure, the engineered structure design. That's what we're talking about. So first of all, let's be very careful with our words. Let's be prayerful, first of all. And in careful, I mean, let's remember that our words can be the source, the solution, part of the solution. But it can just as well make it a whole lot worse. So let's really be conscious of that. And here's where I'd like to, it may have been mentioned before, but we need to start with our own hearts. And humility is key to that. I really believe humility opens the door to a good conversation, opens the door to a solution to conflict and tension that has passed its productive amount, if I may say that. And then good listening invites the opposing party to enter the conversation. Again, listening is an art. Let's remember that. The other thing I have is there's a very well-known phrase from Stephen Covey's book: "Seek first to understand, then to be understood." Sorry, and that is to understand the point of views in your room, whether this is a board meeting, whether it's between teachers, or maybe a parent has come to talk to you. Try to understand. Try to listen, hear them out, before you'd make your point, bring your point across. And then another point I have, this one's a little more practical. And this is a case where I created some misunderstanding in a meeting by a comment I made. I thought the comment was very generic, a little bit humorous possibly, and I went on my merry way. An individual in that meeting contacted me via email the next day saying, "Hey, Tom, what was that all about? Could we talk?" And I called him back. And it was very good. First of all, he was prompt. He wanted clarity, and he was prompt. He got right on it. We were able to clear it up in 5 minutes, and it was really good. That example, seek clarity, seek it promptly. Don't let it linger on. And sometimes we're on the other side of that. We can say, "Oh, well, it's not really much." But if clarity is needed, that's head towards that. And then another point, and this is maybe in a boardroom when we're engaging in something fairly sensitive, is to draw out your thinkers in the room. Can be tension in the room. There can be disagreement, but until everybody's spoken or has the opportunity to speak, you're not prepared to move ahead with a decision, I feel. So draw out the participants. And then maybe a little lighter one. I guess I feel strongly on this one. I've seen it work very well, but take a break from the tension. You possibly have something that's very, you know, two distinct sides, and it's been discussed, and maybe you need to step back from that. Just back up. Take a little break. Maybe you talk about something that's further back or more peripheral of the subject at hand. I've seen coffee do this. Take a coffee break or a little bit of humor can do it as well. It's not wasted time.
Go to Pebbles, definitely. Seek to understand humility with humility. It's good. Vernon or Carson, do you have something you want to add to that one?
Just don't succumb to responding in kind. If there's something said that's unkind or harsh, don't succumb to responding in kind. Better be quiet than to push.
Sure.
Can I say one more thing? It has helped me to remember there's different personalities in the meeting. Some people thrive on tension and conflict, and some people absolutely will do everything in their power to stay away from it. Don't let that stop you from taking the pointers that Brother Tom gave and just working through that till you have a conclusion. I've seen so many times that people just say, "Well, that's his personality. I don't like it. I'm going to go my way." Big gap. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Okay, let's move to the next question. So same thing. We have a conflict, a negative conflict. I appreciated that point, too. Conflict isn't necessarily negative. In fact, we tend to shy away, and it can be very, very positive. But here's another aspect. So what is the right approach when the other party or parties have gone silent? And we'll look to Vernon to speak to that one.
We related to a teacher who had a few communication targets in the congregation. She would talk to them, and the school board didn't know what was going on, let's say. Or I could say it this way. She would go silent only to certain people. And then there was a family who was often criticized during that time. It seemed like their children couldn't do anything right during that time. And what was their choice? They went silent too. So I'm not giving you any answers, am I? Then there was yet another silent scenario that I related to, and that was where the teachers were just communicating to the school board that everything is fine, all is hunky-dory, we're making out fine, everything's fine. Here what was happening, I guess, was a former teacher was communicating with them to the point that the school board didn't know what was going on. This former teacher had a lot of counsel for them, And when we would inquire, things were going fine. It wasn't really an offended silence. It was more of a controlling silence. I realize we've been talking about things that could turn into offenses. Yeah.
So there's a couple scenarios. And now as a moderator, I get to look at Carson and Tom and say, so what would you do in those situations?
I guess my question would be, have they really gone silent? I haven't found that most times people just go completely silent. They're talking to somebody. They're getting their advice from somebody. They're venting on somebody. So maybe do a little bit of background work and figure out who and what that is. Not in a divisive type of way, but in a way to try to find a solution to the problem. Or it may just be your perspective. Communication is a lot of perspective. Try to get on their side of the table and seek to understand why they're not saying much. What's your perspective?
Go ahead.
And I don't have a lot of experience with this, but I would just say that it's important that we understand what kind of silent is it. So again, try to understand from their side, what is it? Silent can mean they're scared of you even, right? They just are fearful of you. They're maybe sad. There's maybe something super big going on in their life, grief. They're relating to it like that. Is it anger? I mean, there you have a scenario. Or they're overworked and they're just like, or they're very busy and they're just like, leave me alone and let me do my thing. The thing is that we don't assume until we dig into it. What is this?
See a bit of a theme through all these questions, and it's kind of like when you point at somebody and you have three fingers pointing at yourself. Where is my heart? Where am I listening? Am I seeking to understand the other side? And what's their perspective? That was good. Okay, let's now we're going to, so that one was in conflict. Now we're going to say there is a gap in communication, so it's occurring. So how can I best analyze my part in it, and what specific things can I do to avoid widening it further? There's been some coming through. Tom, what else do you have to share on that?
So you're suggesting that I have part to play in this, in the gap.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe
I thought I'd be part of the solution. That may be the problem. If we come in to the situation, or maybe we're in it, and we come in as, you need to fix this, and here's how, and let's just get this done, are we going to be effective? How does that feel when somebody comes to us with that? Let's say you got a broken down tractor, and you know what needs to be done, and the mechanic comes in there and says, well, you know, it could be this, it could be that. But no, they had problems in the engine. The tractor won't start, and he's looking at the tires and saying, well, you should update them, and down the list. That's exaggerated. How can I best analyze my part in it? This is really tough sometimes. Really, really tough. Especially when we've been given responsibility. If you're a teacher, and you know, this is your responsibility, this is part of your role in the school, and it's just not working. I think this takes very intentional humility for us to analyze what's best, what's our best part in this. And can we, without shirking our duty, can we step back from it, ask somebody else's advice? Maybe we aren't the right person to relate to, let's say, the parent in this situation. Maybe we aren't. Without shirking our duty, let's ask for another's point of view. As men, let's ask for our wives. We should be doing that for sure. That's huge. But also the rest of our team, our board team, our school board team, you know, am I suited to do this job? Especially when, if our end goal is reconciliation, we should be willing to make this work. again, listen. And think of our style of communication as well, I would say. Again, just think of how Jesus communicated. The difference, you know, in Jesus communicating with the Pharisees sometimes and you know, the woman at the well. Look at his change and how he did that. And I'll just leave it there.
That was good. You mentioned having an end goal of reconciliation. And that, if we have a goal like that and can see long, or see the vision, I guess, that can really help us in our response as well. Appreciate that. Carson, Vernon, do you have something you want to add to that?
Just remember just to underscore the end point of reconciliation, our goal is never my success. Mm-hmm. You know what? I was right in this. I did it right. That's how organizations around us operate. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to come out on top. It doesn't need to be you.
Another thing to remember when you're working, get me right, but if you're working against a wrong spirit, that spirit will knock on your heart's door. So if there's whisperings, you may be tempted to do the like. If there's bitterness, be careful. You might wake at 2 a.m. in the morning and feelings of bitterness will seek to engulf you. Just remember that we consider ourselves lest we also be tempted. I'm not saying don't tackle the problem. I'm simply saying tackle it prayerfully, carefully, and very, very, very carefully as far as your own walk is concerned.
Okay, got one more question. We might have time for a question or so from the audience. If there's something in all this then that you have a question on or a different question you want to throw at them, but we'll go to this one first. When is it evident that strong feelings have widened the gap in communication? No, sorry. When it is evident that strong feelings have widened the gap in communication, what are some steps that can be taken to bridge that gap? Carson, do you have thoughts for us on that one?
I'll just share a little story that I was involved in. The teacher had to expel a child from school for bad behavior. Happened to be that the father was out of town working for a couple days. The teacher called the father after school and explained the situation to him, and the father didn't seem like he understood the seriousness of the misdemeanor, and he simply stated quite emphatically that his son wouldn't be back to school until he was home and he could deal with it. And that was going to be a couple days. Well, the teacher was concerned with the call, and he discussed it with the chairman. Soon after that, the father called the chairman and shared his issues with the situation, and it was very evident that some conclusions were made that were not accurate, and the gap was widening quite quickly. Well, the chairman came to me looking for some advice, and I told him, stop the phone calls. Just stop. Don't do that anymore. As soon as the father got home, we met the chairman and the father. They came to my place. And we talked about it. Father wasn't happy with the teacher. The chairman was unhappy with the father. Each got their turn to share their perspective. And that cleared up a lot of the misunderstandings right away. Just getting together, face to face, talking it through. Oh, that's not how you felt? Oh, okay. It became clear fairly quickly. Each got their turn to share. It came out then that the teacher and the father had not even talked face-to-face, and I encouraged the chairman to arrange a meeting right away between them, work through the issues. Once they got together, the same thing happened. Things were ironed out fairly quickly. I guess just a couple conclusions from that little story. When two or more parties don't want to talk and there's a communication gap, they find it easy to use someone as the middleman. someone to talk to. And as a school board, it may be you as the chairman. They may come to you and you have the father calling you, or God forbid, but maybe the mother. And you have teachers sharing their perspective and all these different things happening. You were not elected by the church to be a litigator in those situations. That is not your job. Get them together. If you want to close that gap, get them together. Remember that each perspective is that. It's just a perspective. Get them together. I'll say it again. Seek to understand each other. And when you do talk, they must be honest with the facts. Maybe it's you. Maybe you're struggling to in this situation. It's unfair if you are hanging a lot of weight on some detail, but you're unwilling to share that detail with them. It's unfair. And those strong feelings start to build fairly quickly. So get together and be brutally honest with each other. Be humble, and God will do the rest of the work.
Appreciate that. Anything to add, Tom? I think that was very well spoken. That can be really hard to do in a situation like that. It just feels like there's going to escalate the conflict, but being a man and doing it anyway can really make a difference. Okay. Any questions you have here that came up, or anything you want to ask them yet about communication gaps? Apparently there was no gaps in your communication. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Tom, Carson, Vernon, for time and effort you put into this and sharing with us. Appreciate that experience. Any closing comments any of you had yet? All set? Sounds good. And Lord bless each of you in your schools as you take ownership of the communication that happens, seeking to understand each other and bridge those gaps, bring things back together, or make it so they don't happen in the first place. It's something I think, well, relationships, communication, God created it. He knew there was going to be gaps. I think it's good for us to work through some of these things. And I think we can spend our lives doing it here. But there's also, going back to what I said at the beginning, that piece of looking forward to heaven with absolutely no communication gaps. Can you imagine being surrounded with thousands of people and you have conversations and there's no miscommunications, no gaps in that? So something to definitely look forward to, something we can't imagine here on earth. Thank you very much.